model, simulation model, so as to be able to understand the problem and explore different ways of dealing with the problem. So there's a very nice book by Ari De Heus. Ari De Heus, he had a strong position. I think he was director of research in Shell, and he used system dynamic models for strategic issues in Shell. Then he wrote a book, The Living Company, which I recommend for you to read if you are considering going further in the direction of using simulation models for dealing with complex problems, whether it is in security or other issues in companies. Because these simulation models, they have been used also, for instance, for project management and many other, for maturity models and many other things. So the problem you have is that the client, typically they are the managers or the directors or the units of the client which you communicate with, they have often not articulated, tacit, still, so to speak, understanding of the problem. They have an intuitive understanding, but they really haven't actually formalized that or expressed it very clearly. And then the problem touches typically several of the units in the company. So if you want to deal with a problem, you cannot just talk to one of the units, because there are different pieces of it that needs to be addressed. So what you have to do is to capture this kind of tacit understanding. Tacit, the word tacit means not express explicitly. Also, it's like implicit, not outwardly shown, and so on. You want to capture this tacit understanding that the group of problem owners has. The way this is done is to be used often tables and two-dimensional matrices to put that understanding. And then modelers typically work with the problem owners, with the managers there. Not all the time, because managers have limited time and also limited patience, but at some, you will have some workshops or meetings with them so as to capture the issues and then express that in a model. And then you have a problem which is called by Ari De Heus as the fundamental modeling problem. If you develop a model in your office and then present it to the managers, then it's likely to be rejected because they feel they don't understand that. That's not their model. So you have to make them their model. But how do you do that if the managers don't have the time to spend all the time together with the model? So that's the problem that you need to solve. And then the typical approach is to use facilitated brainstorming. It's more and more called now group model building. So facilitated brainstorming is kind of the activity that you do, but the process, it's often called group model building. In that you are working with groups of people, the problem owners, typically the leaders of some units, managers, and you work with them in a group, you facilitate, you create dialogues and activities with them so as to extract information. And that gives them enough participation in the way the model is built, that when you later come back and show, okay, here is the model invention that I show you according with what we learned the last time, they are in much better position both to understand the model, even if they are not technically able to make the model themselves. You can explain it to them and debrief it, and they feel it's also it's their baby, so they will buy the results of the model. So typically you have an initial session with a cross-functional team so that you can articulate important information. That allows you to generate some structures. Then you will develop the model either by yourself or in occasional collaboration with some small team in a company. They will, you have to periodically review that with the original group so that they feel it's their baby. Now, the initial brainstorming meeting is typically to have a kickoff. So create the initial design for the simulation. So which are the issues now in the future? Which are the initial variables? Create a causal loop diagram to get started, perhaps using system archetypes. Agree on the objectives and engage the developing team. And also be aware of what kind of data will you need beyond what you have got in the group. How do you get that data? And also create a project map, clarify the next steps. One way of doing that, but there are several, is using hexagons. Hexagons, they are, you can buy them, and they exist in different colors. And the advantage of using hexagons is that hexagons, you, in that you put issues and so on. Hexagons, they simply fit with each other in all six borders. So to this hexagon, you can put another hexagon here, or you can put another hexagon here with different text, some text here, some text here, and some text here. And you can do it in all six directions. You put hexagons together that about issues that belong together. That allows then, while you are facilitating and ideas come from keywords and so on, then you can put it in clusters that relate. So from initial keywords, you are getting a picture of some issue. And you end up by having clusters of hexagons that would then relate to some components of the model. So the transition for that to the model is easier. In addition, the hexagons can have different colors so that you can distinguish between issues, opinions. If there are strong opinions from some important manager, then that's something that you will have to consider. Otherwise, this person will get offended. Not necessarily giving this person right, but you have to make a serious attempt. Then you can use green color for action steps, blue to define variables, and so on. As I said, the advantage of using hexagons is that you can cluster them. And once you see a cluster, then you can see, okay, they relate to, and that will lead you to some module in the simulation model that you have to create. It could be, for instance, related to, say, insider attacks, when another one could be controls that you will be using, and so on. So in this way, you get a growing of issues, and that allows you from that, a path to create in the model. Once you start going from the clusters to variables, then you are putting already, you are entering the model, and so on. Then you can look for completeness. You can look for the behavior of the variables over time, and so on. When you create a causal map, then you start sketching relations. You see the first sketches of feedback loops, and that gives you also a direction as to how to build up the model. When you want to dialogue with people who are not modelers, you will have to do that at a high level. So you will create subsystems related to different issues. They will typically be related to the clusters, and they will be, as I said, for instance, insiders, outsiders, controls, access controls, whatever. So in this way, you are approaching, you are getting a structure of the model. Okay. So basically, the process in creating a model with clients is generate issues, for instance, using hexagons, but there are different approaches. Hexagons is one of them. Cluster them, generate the variables, create a causal loop diagram from the variables, develop diagrams of subsystems, and then proceed to create a simulation model based upon the causal map diagram. And then you will do that iteratively, coming back to the problem owners, so that if it included in the process, they accept this. As I said, this is just a brief description, so that you get an idea as to how actual model development occurs in companies and what kind of steps that are involved. Why do we work then with clients? Because there are three sources of information to making models. So, sources of data for modeling. You have numerical data. It could be, for instance, historical data about number of insider attacks in an organization over some years, or some other thing related to the problem. But they are numbers, and they are typically time series, and so on. And that gives you information about the behavior of different variables in the past. Okay? Then, it could be written data, like reports and so on. Somebody has done some analysis, and this is written down in the form of reports. That allows you to get access to issues that are important to create in the model. And then you have mental data. Mental data is what people know, what they have in their head, but they have not, at least not completely, put down to data in numerical form or to data in report form. If you look at the size of the data, very often most of the data to build a model is here. Because when you are making models, at least in business in organizations, they relate to problems that the organization has. They are unsolved problems, and they are not well understood. So a lot of what you need to address these problems, you need to get from the people by involving them in the communication process. And this mental data very often is spread in the heads of many individuals. So you cannot just go to the company, talk to one person, and get everything you need. Because a company is an organism consisting of many people that have shared understanding. Some people understand some issues that others do not work with, and the other way around. So nobody knows everything. Many people know part of it, and you need the whole thing. So you have division not only of labor, that people are doing different things, but also division of knowledge. And to create a good model of an issue, you have to unify this knowledge that is spread and fragmented in many, many heads. So the reason why we use this approach of facilitated model building, of group model building, supported by some tools like hexagons and so on, is to capture the knowledge that is in the head of many people and that is necessary to combine to create a model. Okay? Questions? Okay. Then the next activity is about introducing Venzin. As to the part related to menus, tools, and functionality, I've been doing that on the fly. When I create examples, I am doing and demonstrating that. So they can do that. Then we have this document that I pointed to, modeling the virus epidemic with Vensim, which is a guided activity telling you exactly what you should do. In addition, you have the modeling guide in Vensim, which I referred to many times, and which I very strongly recommend. If you want to become an experienced modeler, then you will have various chapters, each with an issue, with a challenge to be modeled, starting from simple ones to more complex ones. I know the cases are not related to security. They relate, for instance, to inventories or to project management and so on. But there are activities that you will need anyhow if you work in a company. If you are in a company, they will have issues of logistics and supply chains. They will have projects and many other things. So you extend your understanding of professional life by doing these models, while at the same time you are learning the technology of modeling and simulation, which will be very useful for you. I said it many times before, I can say it even more. If you are interested in that and you motivated to do that and you turn out to have the ability and the gifts which you can develop to create in simulation models, you are actually a very attractive person for companies, because consulting companies like McKinsey, for instance, and many others, the Accenture, for instance, and others, they are looking for people who are good modelers and they get very high salaries. I know that because several of my students have done that. For instance, one who used to be here part-time professor until last year, he's working in a company, a consulting company that is developing models for banks and other companies, and he's very, very well paid. Another one who took a PhD with me on incident reporting models, incident reporting systems. He is now working with a consultant company in Bergen. Again, he has a very, very high salary, much higher than a professor. If you are a good modeler and you work for a consultant company, then you get a lot of money. But this requires developing your ability to model. And this is a very good investment to take the modeling guide of Vensim and go through these cases. In addition to having all the steps described, Vensim has also the solutions. They have models that you can that represent what you are trying to model, so you can always compare your model with the model that is the solution and Vensim has. Okay, so now as to Vensim. Units, I told you yesterday, they are not enforced in Vensim. If you don't put the units, you are not punished. But the problem is that a model that is not consistent in terms of units often is not consistent because the equations are wrong. If an equation is correct and it has units, the units of the equation are consistent, and you get from Vensim a confirmation of that. Let me show you the case here. For instance, if you go now to model, check model is one option. This will check if the diagrams are well connected and if equations are not necessarily consistent, because it cannot understand the mathematics, but it can understand, for instance, if you are using some terms that are undefined and so on. So if you check the model, then you get an answer, the model is okay, I made it, so I have checked that Vensim accepted that. But then you have also the model unit check. And it says units are A-OK, that means are all okay, all the units are okay. If some unit was incorrect, for instance, let me make a deliberate mistake. Let me go in here, and for instance, contacts between pieces. And instead of this, I'm going to put a different unit, like dimensionless. Then I put check units, I click OK. Vensim doesn't give me a mistake. But now I'm going to go to model, unit check, and I get a diagnosis. Then I will have to go, in this case, I made a silly mistake. The only thing that I put the wrong unit. But often the mistake is not that you are putting the wrong unit by hand, but it is that your equation, you are multiplying or dividing by certain things and doing so, and the equation is not unit consistent. For instance, if you are computing the speed of something, it has to be distance divided by time. But if you have an equation and the result is distance squared, this cannot be a speed. So in this way, putting the units in Vensim will detect some errors in your equations to the extent that you are combining things that cannot be combined. So let me say it in a different way. If you get a report, the units are not correct, that allows you to check if you perhaps are using the wrong equation. You can have the wrong units even if you're using the wrong equation, if you have given wrong units to some of the parameters. But one of the possibilities is the wrong equation. If you get that the units are correct, this is not a proof that this equation is correct. So the consequence is the following: you're smashing both of the equations separately and the units, but a units mistake could be an equation mistake. So that's an additional help. So, but Vensim is not very strict about units. If you don't have the right units, still Vensim will try to simulate. Whereas the tool PowerSim that I mentioned yesterday, which is the company that I co-founded something like 25, 26 years ago, there you are required to have the right unit. It will not simulate with the wrong units. So PowerSim is stricter in terms of units, and that's because the idea is a unit mistake can be an equation mistake, so it doesn't let it pass. Okay, now concerning the units, there's one point I want to make. In a correct model, the units for the flows must be the units of the level divided by time. And the reason is that the flow is always a process adding per unit of time to the level. So what Vensim does is it multiplies the flow by the time step, then it adds it to the level. So in order that it has the same unit, what you are adding to the level, the flow must be the unit of the level divided by time. So here is an example. You are modeling capacity. Capacity is something like, for instance, the organization's capacity to produce something. And suppose that in this case, we are actually looking at intrusion detection system, IDS. The capacity of intrusion detection system to detect intrusions. Let's assume that originally it's 20. Then you are adding capacity over time, then the unit of the new capacity must be intrusion detection systems per month. And the depreciation, if you are losing capacity because they are no longer able to perform well, then it will be an outflow and its units might be intrusion detection systems per month. Here is another. The units you always enter in the equations, apart from those that can be computed, where you just put a unit check there. So you can study these slides. I don't want to spend too much time with that. But there can be a certain misunderstanding. For instance, consider this alternative version of expressing capacity. You could say the capacity of the system is how many incidents it can detect per month. If you express the level unit as incidents per month, then the flows, new capacity or capacity depreciation, will have the units incidents per month per month. Why is this could be confusing? Well, because if you say whenever I see a unit of something per month, it must be a flow. This is wrong. This is wrong. So, a flow must be something related to time. That is a necessary condition, but it is not sufficient. If you see something related to time, it could still be a level if you are using that unit to measure in the level, like in this case where you are measuring the capacity of the system in terms of its ability to detect incidents per unit of time. Okay, so here is what I actually demonstrated in VenSim about unit consistency and so on. Now, as to the simulation time unit, when you start a model with VenSim, then you get this window that you are seeing there. This is a window with a number of tabs, and the first tab is the time bounds. So let's go back to VenSim, which I think I closed. Okay, let me start again. So first of all, you can at any time invoke that window. It is the model settings window, and it has several tabs, and the first one is time bounds, and that's the window that you get also when you start a new model. Okay, in that one, then the first thing you must do is to define the initial time and the final time. VenSim offers a default for you. So it starts with initial time 0 and 100, but you can change that. There are more advanced versions of VenSim, which are quite costly, where you can actually put some calendar in that date. The initial time can be some day or even some hour, and the final time some other. But in simpler versions, you have another scale where typically the initial time is 0. And the final time is a number, and it depends. What is this number? Well, it depends on the unit of time. VenSim will start with month, but you can change that to year, or to day, or to week, whatever is suitable. You will choose a unit of time that is reasonable. If the things are happening very slowly, it wouldn't be convenient to use seconds as the unit of time. Then you get huge numbers that you don't understand. What does it mean if you get 3 billion seconds? How does this translate to years or so? That will be nonsensical. So you would then choose a unit of time that allows you to intuitively grasp the numbers that you get there in relation to the problem. So you start by defining which is the unit of time and select that there in the download menu or bar here, and then you put in, if you agree with initial time 0, which normally you would do, then you let it stand, and then the final time you define what it is. So for instance, for the virus epidemic, we assume that the epidemic will be basically be running for 2 days, so we put 48 hours. You choose typically a horizon for the time that is a bit larger than the actual scope, so that you are not cutting away things that are interesting. You can always change that, so you can make an assumption 48 hours for the virus epidemic. If it turns out that's too long, then you can reduce that to 24 hours later. If it's too short, you can extend that to more hours and whatever. So this is not final, whatever choices you make here. But you make an assumption as to the final time. As to the time step, you leave it for the time being. But remember that the time step always relates to the units. So if you have chosen as unit of time month, then the default invention for the time step is 1 month. If you have chosen days, then the default for the simulation is 1 day, and so on. The time step you have to change later, as I mentioned yesterday, so as to achieve the accuracy that you are required to have. And as I said yesterday, the accuracy for you students is visual accuracy. Visual accuracy means the curves that you have do not change anymore if you choose a smaller time step. And just to remind you of what we did yesterday, what I said, the time step relates to the number of computations that you are doing in the simulation. Because what VenSim does is starting with time zero, initial time, and then do some calculation, then take one time step further, do the calculations, then take another time step further, and so on, doing calculations until you come to the final time. So if you choose a big time step, you are doing few calculations, that means you get a coarse, inaccurate result. If you choose a smaller time step, you're getting more accurate, but you shouldn't just choose two small time steps, because then you are shooting sparrows with cannons. What you want is to choose the time step that optimizes the computation time. It doesn't spend initial time. For student projects, actually, you can choose very small time steps and nothing happens. But if you have a professional model with thousands of equations and complicated calculations, then choosing too small a time step means you are spending unnecessary time in doing the calculations. And then the people who are watching the calculation, the simulation, get bored because they are waiting and waiting and waiting until final results appear. But then you can see the basic equation. Your time step is the simulation period. Simulation period is the difference between final time and initial time divided by the number of integration steps. So small time step means many integration steps, higher accuracy. Big time step means few integration steps, less accuracy. Okay, so now the question is, how is actually the simulation computed? What is VenSim doing to compute? That's the objective of chapter 10. There are different ways of doing the calculations. And in order to understand that, let's first consider what happens if you are using, say, a spreadsheet. In a spreadsheet, if you try to model feedback, then you will get an error message, because you have a variable A that is influencing B, and say this is influencing C, this is influencing A. In a spreadsheet would mean you are defining A by C, C by B, B by A, and that's impossible because you have a circular definition. So spreadsheets, they are not good for doing simulation. In fact, you can do that, but then you have to write very many calculations by hand. Whereas in VenSim, you are not having a circular definition, because what happens somewhere necessarily is that you have some time delay. You always have some time delay. Why? Because the calculation is what happens one time step later. So you start with some value here and end up with a value for the variable a time step later. So in reality, you have here time t to begin with, and then there are some calculations, and what you return here is at plus dt. And then in the next calculation, it continues advancing. So you are not defining a ultimately by a, but you are defining a at the time t plus dt in terms of the value that it had before. That's the point of feedback. So the point with using VenSim or PowerSim or the other tools is that you are computing what happens next using feedback. And that's what happens in real life, because in real life you are doing things and they impact back on the state of something, but sometime later. Okay. If you wanted to do feedback with a spreadsheet, then you will have to do that by hand. So here are the calculations. Assume what you are computing is the state of your account, your balance, at some interest rate. So in the year 2000, you would have $1,000. The interest rate, say, is 5%. Then that will give you $50 in interest, so that in the next year you will have $1,050. Which with 5% interest will give you at the end of the year 5250, which you will add, and so on and so on. So you are doing the computation by heart with the time step 1 year and so on. Now suppose, now in, for a bank account it's okay because the interests are computed at time steps of 1 year. But suppose you are want to compute something that is changing continuously during the year. It will be impossible to do that satisfactorily with a spreadsheet, because then you will have to put a lot of small time steps, and for each of these you will have to put the equations there. So here you have a lot of equations, one for every time step, whereas in VenSim you have just one equation. And then VenSim cares for doing all these things of the calculations for different times and advancing the time step and so on. So, if you were doing this with a spreadsheet, then you will have something like this. If you are doing that with a simulation model, then it looks like this. And here, this model, which you can do at home, allows you to compute the interest of your bank account with this very simple structure. But then, make sure that the time step is one, because in a bank, the bank won't use smaller time step. Why wouldn't they do that? Because that will give you even more money. Computing the interest every day will accumulate much more than if you compute the interest at the end of the year. So most of the banks, they give compute the interest only once in a year. Some do that every 6 months, but that's, I think, very rare. So the point with simulation models is that you have one common structure for all the states of the system. And the results here that you see in this table, they come by simulation. This table, by the way, is one of the input-output objects that you can generate. In fact, let me demonstrate that very briefly. If we go back to VenSim here, how would you create a table? Well, first of all, here you have fixed tables. So for instance, this shows you the time and the variable for the parameter virus infection, and you have two different runs. The blue one is with the simulation file here, the red one will be the base simulation, and so on. So all this you can do, okay? But if you want to get that in your interface here, you would go to the control panel, and there is no tab here for tables. Tables are made as special graphs. So you create graph, new, and here you will click as table, and there you enter the parameters so that you can get a table. So it's a little bit silly, I think, that Venzim says it graph, a table is a special graph, because that makes it less intuitive for you. But that's the way you do that in Venzim. We cannot quarrel with them. We have the product and we have to live with that. Okay. So back to this. You could do this as a simple exercise and then create these two kinds of diagrams here. Now, when you have a simulation model, the basic information is always in the levels. Everything else can be computed from the levels, as you can see here. So for instance, if you know the value of customers and potential customers, then you can compute this. You can compute this. From this you can compute this. And from this both you can compute that. So everything you need to compute everything else, you can take from the values of the levels. And the levels, they change over time with the time step. But then, what is a simulation algorithm? There are several simulation algorithms. The most basic one was proposed by the great Swiss mathematician Euler. He proposed us as a way to integrate a differential equation. And this is the Euler algorithm. It says the level is actually the integral of the differential. So the simulation algorithm is start at time zero and compute the initial values for the levels. Actually, they are recorded, so they are recorded already. Use them. Then, compute all the flows in the model. Then add, if the models are in flows. If the flows are in flows, add them. If they are outflows, subtract them from the levels. Then you advance the time by a time step and go to step two. So if you have this model where your savings are 100, whatever, 100 euros, the flow is the savings computed, added. This here means add to the original savings the product of the time step times the interest. Then compute the interest as the savings times the interest rate, with a constant value of the interest rate, which here is 10%. And then you use the algorithm, and that's what happens. Let's look at the time, the value of the level, and the value of the interest. At time zero, you have 100, you compute the interest, is 10% of 100, that is 10. Advance the time by 1, then you get 110 for the savings, compute the interest, is now 11. 10% of 110. Advance the time by one, and do all the calculations and so on until you finish with the computation. In this case, we finish computation arbitrarily at time 6. Okay, so we take a break and then we continue at 2:15.